It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We get a roundup of business and workforce development news in Wisconsin with WPR reporter Joe Schultz as our guide. And you can be part of the discussion as we examine the forces affecting our state's economy and its workforce. Call in with a question. Share comments. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Joe, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
So we're hearing this morning about the Wisconsin State Climatology Office saying this season is the warmest winter on record. Is there a connection here with the booming construction workforce and those numbers that we're seeing in January?
There might be. So last week, the Department of Workforce Development kind of announced they had their monthly jobs report. And state economist Dennis Winters spoke about the warmer than usual winter when he talked about construction jobs. And he kind of tied it to, Wisconsin setting a new record for total construction jobs in the month of January. Normally, our construction season runs from April to November. And some other economists that I talked to said that it might have been a factor as well. But we did have a cold spell in January. It got pretty chilly kind of in the middle of the month before it warmed up again. So kind of hard to say definitively, but I think it does. It probably did play a role.
So what might be causing this construction boom?
That's kind of like the old adage of you ask a question to five different people, you get five different responses.
Or five different economists in this instance, yes.
Yeah, or unions or associations or whatever.
Sure, sure.
So the Wisconsin Builders Association, they kind of pointed to stabilizing interest rates. There hasn't been an interest rate hike in quite some time, and they said that that's given builders a little bit more certainty, especially for like housing projects and bigger housing projects. An iron workers union based in Madison, they told me that, the federal investments in the state's infrastructure have really played a role. And then another economist that I spoke to kind of pointed to a national boom in construction, specifically of, building manufacturing facilities. So it kind of varies, but it's probably, kind of a combination of all those factors.
The source who brought up the connection to the dollars flowing in, like from the bipartisan infrastructure law and the upgrades we're seeing in roads and bridges and other projects, what impact could that be a catalyst for this job surge?
So there's more money flowing to the state from the federal government in terms of, just like funding some of these projects. There's certain projects that local governments just kind of like need grants for, or like grants are super helpful for building, so just kind of with more funding coming in, it kind of gives, it gives resources to help kind of invest in infrastructure and make sure that, our bridges are safe and we have roads to drive on. There's the union who brought up that, is kind of based in Madison, and they kind of pointed toward expanding apprenticeship programs in trade unions as another kind of piece that is really important as well.
I wonder, is this workforce boom sustainable? I mean, how long will this last?
If I knew the answer to that, I might, be spending some more time on Wall Street. I'm not really sure. But I think in the immediate term, it'll be interesting to see the numbers when we get out of January and into February, March, April, May, just because in Wisconsin, we all know, we've all experienced, construction season on highways and our roadways and stuff, and had to kind of plan our travels accordingly. So I think when we see the numbers for peak construction season, that'll be really interesting, and it'll give us a little bit better indicator of, is this boom in jobs just kind of short term? Once we start really building out infrastructure, what does it kind of look like? I think that'll be very interesting kind of as we get the numbers as the summer kind of rolls on.
Mm-hmm. WPR reporter Joe Schultz with us as we talk about Wisconsin economic news and the impacts to different workforces. You can join in questions and comments at 800-642-1234. You reported on new workforce figures from the Wisconsin Hospital Association. What are you learning about vacancies in the state hospitals and clinics?
So the Wisconsin Hospital Association puts out a workforce report each year. And this year they found that the overall vacancy rate for staffing in Wisconsin hospitals was unchanged from 2021 to 2022. It stayed at about 10%. And that's, you know, that's not good. The Hospital Association says that that's still really high, but it didn't increase. So I guess that's kind of good news. And, you know, 8 out of the 18 healthcare professions that the report tracked had double digit vacancy rates. And, you know, that can affect patients from anything from, you know, having to wait a little longer to schedule an appointment with your physician to, you know, maybe having longer wait times if you go to the emergency room, or, you know, in some cases, it even forces hospitals to close down certain services that they offer, and then you'd have to drive a little further to get that service. So it's, still really high vacancy rates, but they didn't increase kind of overall.
And considering Wisconsin is an aging state, how acute could this workforce shortage, even if it's sustained right now, how acute could it become in future years?
So people over 65 require more health care than, you know, the younger population. So in 2021, people 65 or older made up less than 20% of the U.S. population, but they accounted for 40% of healthcare spending. And by 2030, the Hospital Association anticipates that almost all baby boomers will be of retirement age by 2030. And, you know, the workforce shortage in hospitals it could be a real issue, because demand for healthcare is only going to increase by the end of the decade as more people reach retirement age. So, you know, they really want to figure this workforce challenge out. One of the things that someone from the association kind of told me was that, you know, for other industries, you know, the flow of retirements, they call it the silver tsunami, that's going to end. But for hospitals, this increase in demand from baby boomer retirements is going to persist for a couple decades.
Hmm. Let's bring in Chris in Columbus. Hi, Chris.
Hey, great show as usual. I am a nurse, and I do contract nursing all across the state. And I can tell you that Wisconsin Hospitals report is rosy at best. All the hospitals are critically short-staffed, especially in support staff. I mean, we're having to draw our own labs because we don't have enough phlebotomists to get up to draw labs on time. We don't have enough CNAs to do just basic patient care. Nurses are critically short-staffed. And the unnecessary COVID cash, ballooned budgets, and now everybody's cutting back, laying off staff, shifting them to contractors, delaying raises or bonuses. The financial picture in the healthcare industry is horrid, and it's largely due to federal dollar mismanagement. And
Chris, thank you so much for calling in. Have you heard this, Joe Schultz, this on-the-ground scenario there that Chris is laying out?
Not directly. Mm-hmm. I think HSHS in Western Wisconsin, there's a lot of turmoil with, a hospital system out in Western Wisconsin. I know Marshfield Clinic Health System had big layoffs last year. And, you know, he's not wrong about, you know, health systems are cutting back, but I haven't heard from, you know, experts or officials kind of regarding some of the other stuff, I have heard that it's financially kind of challenging for hospitals because of, they kind of point to Medicaid reimbursement, and that you know, Medicaid funds hospitals under the cost of care is mm-hmm. kind of what the association points to a lot of times. And, you know, I'm sure that, you know, the shortage of workers is definitely burning out, you know, the staff that are at these hospitals. Like, that's definitely happening. And I, you know, the association kind of said as much to me earlier this week when we wrote that story, was that, you know, when hospitals are short staffed, like, other workers have to pick up extra hours, they have to work overtime to try to fill the gaps. And it's, yeah, you know, I'm sure that's super tough for healthcare workers right now.
Joe Schultz is a WPR reporter as we explore latest developments affecting Wisconsin's business sector, its healthcare sector. You can join in the discussion, call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine major forces affecting our state's top industries with a roundup of business and workforce development news. Joe Schultz is a WPR reporter, and you can bring your questions, your thoughts to the discussion. Call in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Joe, let's turn to artificial intelligence. The governor's task force on workforce and artificial intelligence convened this month to work on its game plan for embracing AI. Here's Department of Workforce Development Secretary designee Amy Pachuk.
We're just going to keep making those connections to make sure that we are prepared for the changes that AI is going to bring. And that includes making sure our students are prepared, our workers are prepared, and our businesses are prepared to really adopt this technology so they can stay competitive and Wisconsin can stay strong.
Okay, so a lot of stress there on preparation. What does that mean?
So, you know, the Department of Workforce Development, WEDC and the Department of Administration all had their top officials at the task force meeting this month in Oshkosh. Really, you know, they want to make sure that as we continue to kind of embrace AI in the workplace, that we're not leaving workers behind. And, you know, they're going to come up with kind of a recommendation plan for Governor Tony Evers, and that'll get included in his next state budget proposal. And, you know, they said that, you know, workforce development and education are going to be kind of key to ensuring that, you know, workers already in the workforce who, you know, didn't learn about AI in school when they were kind of coming up and getting their education, to make sure that there's, you know, programs to help kind of train them in AI so they don't get left behind. And yeah, that, I mean, that's kind of the biggest key, is they're trying to figure out, you know, what do workers kind of need to know about AI? How can AI be used in the workplace? And how can we kind of augment workers without, you know, necessarily fully replacing humans? You know, I don't think I think they want to avoid, you know, the Terminator movie.
Well, AI is a moving target. How are employers and labor leaders reacting to this evolution and advancements in AI?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. They had the meeting at Oshkosh Corp's global headquarters, and you know, we heard from the guy leading AI efforts at Oshkosh Corp, and he mentioned that, you know, they're using tools like ChatGPT, generative AI tools, to, you know, kind of write, you know, emails to suppliers and kind of automate some basic kind of office tasks that AI can handle. But, you know, they're also kind of working with their workforce at Oshkosh Corp to, you know, illustrate like what are the things AI just can't do yet. And, you know, labor leaders really kind of hammered home that message of, you know, we don't want workers to be left behind. We like technological advancements that make our jobs safer, that make our work more efficient, but we don't want to devalue work in that process. So, you know, I think companies are using AI to kind of augment their workforce right now. That was what Oshkosh Corp said, you know, and I think, you know, labor leaders, the task force heard from the AFL-CIO, they just want to make sure that workers are protected and that workers aren't replaced and that, you know, work still has a value even in kind of an age of AI.
I mean, what conceivably can these task forces accomplish? I mean, we've got one in the legislature, we've got one with the governor. What can they accomplish?
So the governor's task force, they're going to work on a plan that they're going to present to the governor that's going to include proposals for like funding for workforce development and education programs kind of around AI. You know, I think in Wisconsin, we see the budget process kind of play out where the governor kind of presents the budget to the legislature. The legislature makes big revisions and, you know, sometimes starts from the ground up. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how that plays out, you know, politically in Wisconsin with divided government. But I think, you know, just kind of having that conversation is probably important because it gets folks kind of thinking about AI.
And what others around the table are thinking as well. WPR reporter Joe Schultz with us as we talk about Wisconsin economic news and workforce. You can join in questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Let's turn to diversity in businesses. And you report Wisconsin businesses owned by people of color account for over $1.6 billion in payroll. What effect is growing diversity in business ownership having on our state economy?
Yeah, so that number is from a new UW Extension report. And the researchers found that, you know, from 1997 to 2012, growth of diverse businesses, businesses owned by people of color, outpaced growth of non-minority owned businesses in Wisconsin. And I think, you know, the effect of that is one of the businesses that I spoke to was an African grocery store in Green Bay. And the co-owner there mentioned that, you know, there's an immigrant population in Green Bay and they're providing kind of this essential service of, you know, providing food that's, you know, closer to the food they would have had in, you know, where the in their home countries. And that's a really important service. They provide, you know, those cultural benefits like that. And then, you know, the benefit is just kind of the same as it is for most of our small businesses in terms of, you know, making sure that our communities aren't just, you know, Targets and Walmarts and everything else, that we have, you know, a strong small business economy in Wisconsin. So, you know, because that's kind of what makes our communities communities at the end of the day is those, you know, unique businesses that you can't find anywhere else.
What barriers surfaced here? What barriers do underrepresented groups face to start businesses in Wisconsin?
The biggest one is funding. It can be really tough to secure loans and financing is what I heard from a couple small businesses in Wisconsin.
Access to capital.
There was a chocolatier in Madison and, you know, she had to cash out her retirement. And, you know, her mom had to take out a mortgage on the family home in order for her to, you know, get a brick and mortar location. And it's really kind of financing. Lending discrimination is a big issue as well. Same with the grocery store in Green Bay that I spoke with. You know, it took them about 2 years to make their dream a reality because they had to secure the financing.
Did the report indicate, are there any rural and urban divides in minority business ownership?
Not exactly. What we learned was that, you know, there are minority businesses kind of across the state in every corner of the state, probably a little more concentrated in those urban areas where, you know, there just are by number, you know, more people of color in general in urban areas. But it didn't really necessarily go into the rural urban divide too much in the report.
Beyond access to capital, are there disparities more pronounced among certain ethnicities in business ownership in Wisconsin?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So there was a really nice graph in the report actually, that really illustrated that. Yeah. So Asian-owned businesses are represented roughly the same as, you know, their share of the population. But, you know, Black-owned and Latino-owned businesses are underrepresented. You know, we have fewer businesses by proportion of, you know, the number of businesses than we do African-Americans or Hispanic individuals in the state.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for your reporting. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Joe Schultz is a reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.